Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. French President François Hollande is increasing the country's participation in airstrikes against Islamic State militants. Mr. Hollande has sent France's flagship aircraft carrier to the Middle East. One of the gunmen involved in the recent terrorist attacks in Paris claimed allegiance to the Islamic State group. Meanwhile, the first edition of the French magazine Charlie Hebdo, published since last week's attack, hit the newsstands in France today and quickly sold out. Lisa Bryant reports.
All 700,000 copies of the weekly sold out within hours of appearing in newsstands around the country. The edition is the first since gunmen shot dead a dozen people at Charlie Hebdo's Paris office last week. The magazine came out as Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch claimed responsibility for the attack. In a video, it said their shootings were in revenge for the cartoons of the Muslim prophet Muhammad the magazine has published over the years. Lisa Bryant, Paris.
The top U.S. and Iranian diplomats are meeting again in a renewed effort to resolve their conflict over Iran's nuclear program. Iran's foreign minister said his meeting today in Geneva with the U.S. Secretary of State shows that Iran and a group of leading world nations are ready to speed up their negotiations. The Nigerian military says it has expelled an assault by Islamist insurgents in northeastern Borno State. The military says on its Twitter feed, soldiers pushed back an attack today on the town of Biu. It says the troops are in pursuit of the attackers after capturing five gunmen and two anti-aircraft guns. Residents say the fighters invaded the town in pickup trucks and motorcycles. This is VOA News. The U.S. Embassy in Uganda says a top Lord's Resistance Army commander is now in the custody of Ugandan troops. The embassy said U.S. Special Forces today handed over Dominic Ongwen in the Central African Republic, where he had turned himself in on January 6th. A Ugandan army spokesman said Tuesday that Ongwen would be sent to the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Tanzania's government has declared a ban on witchcraft in an effort to halt attacks on albinos. The move follows mounting pressure on the government to protect albinos who lack pigment in their skin and hair and whose body parts are used by witch doctors in magic potions. The UN Human Rights Agency says more than 70 people with albinism have been killed for body parts in Tanzania since 2000. Reuters reports that Polycarp Abba Abba, the former finance and economy minister of Cameroon, has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. A special court issued the sentence after Abba Abba was found guilty of embezzling $11 million. He says he'll appeal. Reuters says Kenya's army today killed five suspected al-Shabaab militants in fighting in the country's north. One soldier was reported killed. The fighting began when militants attacked a truck carrying soldiers. Republicans here in the U.S. have taken control of Congress following victories in House and Senate races last November. Jim Malone takes a look.
With majorities in both the Senate and the House of Representatives, Republicans have a fresh opportunity to prove themselves to the American people. House Speaker John Boehner hopes to move beyond partisan gridlock.
The battle of ideas never ends and frankly never should. As Speaker, all I ask and frankly expect is that we disagree without being disagreeable.
Republican control of Congress will be a major challenge for President Barack Obama in his last 2 years in office. Jim Malone, Washington.
Pope Francis called for unity in Sri Lanka at a mass attended by hundreds of thousands of people in Colombo. Large crowds packed the streets along the capital's oceanfront on Tuesday to cheer the Pope as he arrived. Singapore's defense minister says a Singaporean Navy ship has located the fuselage of an Air Asia jet that crashed into the Java Sea last month. The minister says a remotely operated vehicle took images showing part of the plane's wing on the fuselage. Pro-democracy lawmakers in Hong Kong raised yellow umbrellas and walked out during the annual policy address by Hong Kong's chief executive today. The lawmakers called for universal suffrage in the Chinese territory. From the VOA News Center in Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiswu Heeb, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A study released Wednesday says the conflict in South Sudan could cost the country tens of billions of dollars in lost economic opportunities unless peace is reached soon. The country's neighbors will also suffer lost trade and other costs the longer the crisis drags on.
That's VOA's Gabe Joslow reporting. Details coming up.
Also, Nigerian security officials say the military today repelled an attack by several dozen Boko Haram fighters on the northern city of Biu.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigerian security officials say the military today repelled an attack by several dozen Boko Haram fighters on the northern city of Biu. The rebels attacked the town in pickup trucks and on motorcycles. The security source says most of the rebels died during the three-hour battle. Biu is an administrative center in Borno State with a population of about 150,000. Borno is one of three northwestern states that have been subjected to 5 years of attacks by the armed Islamist sect. Insecurity in the region is a major issue in national elections scheduled for February 14th. President Goodluck Jonathan is running against a former general, Muhammadu Buhari. Buhari ruled the country for almost 2 years in the 1980s. In related news, in Gombe, three people died yesterday when a suicide bomber detonated explosives he was wearing at a mosque. 14 others were wounded.
A study released today says the conflict in South Sudan could cost the country tens of billions of dollars in lost economic opportunities unless peace is reached soon. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports the country's neighbors will also suffer lost trade and other costs the longer the crisis drags on.
The report from Frontier Economics, a European consultant firm, estimates the conflict in South Sudan could cost the country up to $28 billion during the next 5 years. But the effects of the war over time could result in losses of $158 billion during the next 20 years, compared to a scenario in which South Sudan enjoys the economic benefits of peace and development. Frontier Economics analyst Amar Breckenridge says the conflict is threatening South Sudan's few assets, including oil revenues, which account for 70% of this year's expected budget.
At the moment, South Sudan faces a double squeeze insofar as its oil volumes are falling because of the conflict, and oil prices are also going through the floor. And on top of that, military expenditure is increasing.
The conflict that began in December 2013, following a split in the ruling party, has displaced more than 1 million people and created a humanitarian crisis that has hobbled the young nation's fledgling development. Breckenridge says over the years, the war could wear down the economic potential for the country's young workforce.
Every child, for example, that suffers from malnutrition, that's in and of itself a terrible thing, but also has significant impacts on his or her own development potential as an adult and the productivity they can bring to bear to the labor force.
The report says South Sudan's neighbors will also pay the cost of war, up to $53 billion in lost economic potential. Uganda would be hit hardest due to reduced trade opportunities, lost remittances from Ugandan citizens living in South Sudan, and the prolonged presence of Ugandan troops in the country. Refugees from South Sudan could also put more pressure on the region, as well as on international donors who have paid the bill for much of the humanitarian response to the conflict. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma predicts there will be no new cases of Ebola in his country by the end of March. Mr. Koroma made his prediction at town halls in Port Loko, Donkolili, and Bombali. Those are districts that have had high numbers of Ebola infections and deaths. In the last 24 hours, 19 new cases were reported in Sierra Leone. 8 of them occurred in or near Freetown, the capital. The World Health Organization says there have been more than 10,000 infections in Sierra Leone and more than 3,000 deaths. In related news, all football teams headed for the African Nations Cup will be tested for Ebola as they enter Equatorial Guinea's capital, Malabo. The Confederation of African Football announced the mandatory testing procedure today. The World Health Organization says there have been more than 21,000 cases of Ebola and more than 8,400 deaths.
The World Bank says the economies of Liberia and Sierra Leone continue to be hard hit by the Ebola crisis. The effects of the outbreak have spread throughout the countries and not just the areas with the highest infection rates. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
The latest World Bank report focuses on how the epidemic is affecting families, that is, at the household level. Nearly half of Liberian heads of households are out of work, while in Sierra Leone, many in urban areas have lost their jobs. Kristen Himmeline, a senior bank economist and statistician, says the bank is conducting monthly surveys.
Our concern is that as we focus on the health aspect, that is beginning to resolve itself, particularly in Liberia and hopefully soon in Sierra Leone. But there's a lot of impacts that could be long-term for the economies, and we want to make sure that we start the dialogue for the impact on households.
She describes some of the job losses.
In Sierra Leone, our latest report found that there's nearly 180,000 workers that are outside agriculture that are no longer working, and this is particularly impacting petty traders. We've seen they've lost a lot of jobs, and that those that are still operating, the revenues declined almost 40%.
In Liberia, the World Bank reports women are particularly vulnerable as the labor market stagnates.
Many women are involved in petty trading, and this is non-agricultural self-employment. And this is the sector that where we've seen the largest impacts. So as markets have closed down, these women have not had a place to sell their goods. They've had to consume their working capital. They've had to spend that money to meet household demand.
She says 60% of Liberian women are not working, compared to 40% of the men. Himmeline says households in both countries have been forced to make short-term economic decisions to cope with job losses or food shortages.
That puts their future well-being in peril. For example, in Liberia, 80% of those surveyed had either sold assets or slaughtered livestock or borrowed money, spent savings, delayed investments. And when they take these types of coping actions, while they're completely understandable in the short term, they really impact the household's ability to maintain their standard of living or to move out of poverty in the future.
Other survey findings show that more people seeking treatments for illnesses other than Ebola are avoiding health clinics in Sierra Leone's capital, Freetown. Himmeline says they're afraid of getting sick with the virus. In Liberia, many say they do not have enough money to buy rice, regardless of the price. The World Bank senior economist explains how the economic survey is being conducted.
We're using kind of an innovative method. We're using a high-frequency cell phone survey. In both countries, we were fortunate to have nationally representative surveys before the crisis broke out, and they contained phone numbers. And so about half of the people that were interviewed in these large surveys before the crisis had phone numbers, and we've been calling these phone numbers on a regular basis.
The Gallup organization is conducting the phone surveys in Liberia in conjunction with the Liberia Institute of Statistics and Geo-Information Services. In Sierra Leone, information is collected by Statistics Sierra Leone in partnership with Innovations for Poverty Action. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhi, 14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian security officials say the military today repelled an attack by several dozen Boko Haram fighters on the northern city of Biu. And the World Bank says the economies of Liberia and Sierra Leone continue to be hard hit by the Ebola crisis, and would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The president of Malawi has declared half of the country a disaster zone after floods killed 48 people and displaced more than 70,000 others. President Peter Mutharika says flooding caused by heavy rains has devastated parts of 15 southern districts. The flooding has destroyed maize crops and washed away livestock, bridges and roads. Mr. Mutharika says the government does not have the financial resources to deal with the crisis and requested foreign assistance. Malawi's Department of Climate Change and Meteorological Services warns of continued heavy rainfall and flash floods in the country for the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Ethiopian opposition parties say they are facing roadblocks in their efforts to register for the May elections. The parties say the National Election Board is complicating procedures for no good reason and raising doubt that the elections will be free or fair. Martha van der Wolf reports from Addis Ababa.
The Unity for Democracy and Justice Party has the only opposition member in Ethiopia's 547-seat parliament. But it is unclear if the party will be allowed to participate in the May elections, as the National Election Board has rejected UDJ logos. Wanda Mugola of the National Election Board says it is not about the logos, but about procedural rules.
According to their bylaws, it says the president of the party shall be nominated or elected by the General Assembly. But they nominated by some few persons, the high officials there. So we oppose this. They have to strictly follow the bylaws, their own bylaws.
The National Election Board has given UDJ 2 weeks to organize a General Assembly. And if its conduct is approved, the party will be allowed to participate in the May elections. But the UDJ has decided to not hold another General Assembly. UDJ Vice Chairman Girma Saifu, the only member of parliament not affiliated with Ethiopia's ruling party, says the election board's actions are not justified.
They don't have any legal ground or a moral ground or administrative guideline to do these things. But this is an interference just to put a block to our active participation in the election.
Voter registration in Ethiopia began last week and up to 60 parties may run for seats in the upcoming elections. The Blue Party, formed in 2012, will be contesting elections for the first time. Blue Party Chairman Yilkal Getnet says he is pessimistic about the elections as the party has repeatedly and unsuccessfully tried to work with the election board on certain issues.
They are reluctant and they didn't give us any positive response or sign to improve the things. We didn't get any signs that improves the political climate. Now, for the coming election to be free and fair, we need to discuss about the political climate, to have a free media, to have an international observers to observe the election, and including the budget sharing systems, and so on and so on.
During the 2005 elections, opposition parties won about a third of the seats, but accusations of vote rigging led to mass demonstrations in which at least 200 protesters died and thousands were arrested. The ruling Ethiopia's People Revolutionary Democratic Front has been in power since the overthrow of the military junta in 1991. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, Addis Ababa.
In New York on Monday, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter announced that the total eradication of guinea worm may be within reach. The parasite can grow up to a meter long. It comes from larvae that live within a tiny crustacean found in rain ponds, mostly in remote rural and desert places in sub-Saharan Africa. When the pond water is drunk, unfiltered, these larvae can grow within the human body. They gestate for a year before being released in an agonizing process that can maim or even prove fatal. VOA's Adam Phillips has more on Mr. Carter's announcement.
The Carter Center has been using diplomacy, science, fundraising, and demographic research to control and eradicate guinea worm since 1986. But at the opening of the American Museum of Natural History's new exhibit, Countdown to Zero, Defeating Disease in the 21st Century, President Carter said it was his first personal experience with a victim of guinea worm that really brought home its horror to him. He and some other officials had been making speeches about health in a village when he noticed a young woman off to the side holding a baby.
I went over after the speeches were over to ask her the name of the baby. It was not a baby. It was her right breast. It was about a foot long, and coming out of a nipple of her breast was a guinea worm. Later that year, she found out she had 11 other guinea worms coming out of her body. And it's an unforgettable experience when you see people suffering from this.
The Carter Center's ambitious on-the-ground survey to measure the extent of the affliction revealed about 3.5 million cases of guinea worm in about 23,600 villages.
The Carter Center has now been to every village, or train people to go there. And we've been able to reduce the number of guinea worms from 3.5 million cases. Last year we had 126 cases in the whole world. We know everybody that has guinea worm. We know the villages in which they live. And we have them isolated so they can't spread the disease by letting the worm put more eggs in the water that people drink. So we're working on this, and we hope that in the next few years we'll have zero guinea worms in the world.
Keeping real-time computer records of who is infected and where and what interventions are working is key to the elimination of the disease, says Mark Siddle, who curated the American Museum of Natural History's new exhibit.
You cannot treat what you cannot track.
There are local obstacles. Nomadic people like the Tuareg may drink from one guinea-infested pond, yet extrude the worm hundreds of kilometers away. But careful and constant grassroots education helps. Since there is a year-long lag time between the drinking of infested water and the appearance of the full-grown, meter-long guinea worm in the body, the connection has historically been unclear to many villagers, who have often ascribed the worms to witchcraft. But seeing the tiny crustaceans that carry the worm larvae as they swim around in the clear glass jar of pond water will convince them of the life cycle. Also, encouraging people to drink the pond water through a simple cloth-covered straw that strains out the crustaceans is highly effective. Although the number of known cases of guinea worm is down to 126, President Carter says that overconfidence can also be an obstacle to ridding the entire world of the disease. Close enough is not good enough. Even with the best intentions, the best technology, the best outreach, and the best of luck, global eradication will fail without the cooperation of national leaders.
We don't intrude on countries in any way. We sign a memorandum of understanding or a contract with them, and we try to give them credit when success is realized. But the whole world needs to be involved in helping them, and I hope the whole world will help us get rid of the last case of guinea worm.
President Jimmy Carter, who directs the Carter Center in Atlanta, Georgia, announced the near eradication of guinea worm at a press preview of the Countdown to Zero, Defeating Disease in the 21st Century exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
Islamic leaders may be denouncing the latest issue of Charlie Hebdo, but some Muslim readers are searching for copies of the magazine that sold out shortly after hitting France's newsstands today. Lisa Bryant reports on the hunt from Paris, which comes as Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch claimed responsibility for last week's attacks against the satirical French weekly.
If you didn't line up at about 5 a.m. to buy a copy of Charlie Hebdo on Wednesday, chances are you'll be hearing this.
Yeah, all finished. Morning time come 6:40, 10 minutes, all finished. Only 10 minutes.
That's Juna Uddin from Bangladesh, who has a newsstand in northeastern Paris. Residents here come from all over the world, but they all know about Charlie Hebdo.
Il y en avait 100 déjà qui faisaient la queue ce matin.
Same answer from the newsstand down the street, where Patricio Salcedo says his 255 copies of the magazine were sold out in minutes. In fact, all 700,000 copies of the weekly sold out within hours of appearing in newsstands around the country. The edition is the first since gunmen shot dead a dozen people at Charlie Hebdo's Paris office last week. The magazine came out as Al-Qaeda's Yemen branch claimed responsibility for the attack. In a video, it said their shootings were in revenge for the cartoons of the Muslim prophet Muhammad the magazine has published over the years. But Charlie Hebdo is undaunted. This newest edition again features Muhammad cartoons, including one on its cover where he is crying and holding a sign saying, "I am Charlie." Editor-in-chief Gerard Biard says that for years the magazine has not only spoofed Islam, but all kinds of religious fundamentalism.
Pour moi, la croyance, c'est quelque chose d'intime et qui doit rester intime. Et je le respecte.
Biard says the newspaper respects personal religious convictions, but not religion that becomes politicized. That's what revolts us, he says. That's what we're mocking.
Il va revenir, si j'ai bien compris.
Oui, on aura demain, après-demain.
Vous m'en gardez deux, s'il vous plaît. Je suis la femme de Houra.
Turkish journalist Defne Gursoy is a regular Charlie Hebdo reader. She loves what she calls its out-of-limits humor, and she approves of the new Muhammad cover.
It was probably the best cover to do, you know, continuing this anarchic kind of disturbance of everything that's taboo. This is the only way out. There's no other way out. You can't be complaisant.
The cover has angered some Muslims both overseas and in France. Mohamed Haniche, Secretary General of UAM 93, a Muslim association in the Saint-Denis region outside Paris, says leaders like himself have told Muslims to stay calm and not to react.
On dit à ce journal, vraiment, vraiment, vu le climat national.
Haniche describes the Mohamed cartoons as an irresponsible act by Charlie Hebdo. Given the tense national climate, it's not considered free expression in France to mock the Holocaust, he says, nor should it be to mock the Muslim prophet. But not all Muslims agree. At a nearby cafe, Boussad Merzouk from Algeria is on the waiting list to buy a copy of Charlie Hebdo.
C'est pour sa solidarité. Je suis très solidaire.
Merzouk says he's not a regular Charlie reader, but he's outraged at last week's attack. He approves of its satirical bent. He wants to buy a copy in solidarity for the dead cartoonists and for all the shooting victims. More issues of Charlie Hebdo will be printed in the coming days, but Merzouk may still need patience. At the newsstand around the corner, he is number 585 on the waiting list. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Ebola is not a curse or spiritual infection. It is a deadly disease, a fever spread by contact with the body fluids of infected people. I am Dr. Kande Greaves. If symptoms start with a fever, fatigue, and muscle pain, within a few days, vomiting and diarrhea sets in, and victims lose about 4 liters of body fluid each day. Ebola is highly infectious. If you experience any of these symptoms, seek medical help immediately. You must wash your hands regularly. Do not eat or handle bushmeat. Stay away from people suffering from Ebola. And do not handle the bodies of Ebola victims. If you have had contact with someone who has Ebola, you need to have your temperature monitored daily for any change. Early diagnosis and treatment is critical to your survival. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa. VOA.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga.
Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.